This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
You're buying tuna. How the hell do you know what you're getting? Let alone how it was caught, when it was caught, where it was caught, who caught it, how they were treated, how much they were paid for that. I mean, all of that stuff. Once that becomes a mystery, then it's just there's openings for the miserable treatment of the ocean and the fisheries.
As more of us are becoming aware of the dark side of the seafood industry, the locavore revolution has been moving full throttle into seafood. This week on Sea Change Radio, we hear from Kirk Lombard, the founder of a community-supported fishery, or CSF, called Sea Forager. We learn about the ins and outs of his business, the challenges facing smaller players swimming with the sharks of industry, and why Lombard and other CSFs hope to attract good citizens rather than just typical consumers. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Kirk Lombard. He is the founder of Sea Forager Seafood Company. Kirk, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks for having me, Alex.
So for our listeners, why don't you first explain how Sea Forager works?
Okay, well, it operates along the lines of sort of like a produce box, CSA delivery. People sign up online for a minimum of, I think, 4 deliveries. They pay a set rate. And then I choose based on what I think is most sustainable option, plus what's the freshest. So, and then I provide that seafood. I deliver to various drop locations and also door-to-door service. If it's requested, if it's in San Francisco, we can do that. So
what gave you the idea for this? Are there other
CSFs
around the country that do this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's, I think, a growing trend, happily. There's a few other competitors in the Bay Area. But when you look at how many different seafood companies there are, I mean, there are dozens in California. There are way fewer people who define themselves as CSFs or fish delivery packages. And so there's less competition, which is one of the reasons that I was interested in doing it, just on a business level. The way Sea Forager started is that I do walking tours where they're very fishy, sort of fish-centric, seafoody, salty walking tours. I take people around various neighborhoods and on the coastline, and I teach them about the seaweeds that grow there and the monkey face eels that live under the rocks, and we practice how to throw casting nets so people can catch their own small fish using the Hawaiian casting net technique. And I demystify that because there's a lot of different people who teach how to do that online. And I have the simplest way to do it and the most effective. So I teach people how to go out and get stuff. And I was doing these tours for a couple of years, and I just started to notice that at the end of the tour, I'd get a lot of people who would ask me. They'd say, hey, so if I can't go out and throw a casting net and catch my own herring, or I don't have the time to go out and catch a perch on the coastline here or go fishing for stripers or whatever, how do I get something that I know is fresh and sustainable? So I was pointing them in various directions and just throwing a lot of business at various other, well, really there was only one or two different companies that I was really throwing people towards. And I just decided, well, since they're asking that question, why don't I provide the seafood? And with the contacts that I've made in the seafood world over the last 20 years, I've been able to do that. So, that's how it happened.
Take us back to that 20-year period a little bit. Give us a little bit of background. You have a very interesting past.
That's it. It's a hard one because I've worn a lot of different hats. So we'll just. I've done a lot of different jobs over the years, but the one thing that I always have done is I've always fished, mostly recreationally, I've always just been in love with being out on the water and or just along the shoreline, as it were. Most of the fishing that I actually do is shore-based. So like the things that I write about in my book the most are things like monkey face eels and night smelt and surf smelt and fishing from some of the piers in the Bay Area. And that's always been sort of my, you know, my focus. As many different jobs and careers as I had over the years, the one thing that I always have done is been connected to the ocean in some way or another. And so I just decided at a certain point to commit to a life in seafood. I'm a true seafooditarian in the old Mr. Flood. That I'm making an obscure reference to a book by Joseph Mitchell, who has a wonderful take on American seafood in the 1930s. You can read about it in a book called Up in the Old Hotel, but he has a piece called Old Mr. Flood, which describes a person who's just passionate about seafood. And Old Mr. Flood refers to himself as a seafooditarian. And so that's how I refer to myself.
And what is the problem with being a seafooditarian in today's marketplace if you're not a conscious consumer in terms of what you're putting in your body and what you're doing in terms of supporting some of these less sustainable businesses? Why don't you explain how your business is kind of a reaction to some of the market inequities and inefficiencies?
If you don't have a conscience and you don't have a problem, you know, you can go do anything. But if you do have a conscience and, you know, you're concerned about the plight of the oceans and the seafood resources, you know, there's some very practical things that you can do.
So what is the flip side of your business? The people who actually are conscious about seafood are your consumers, but 99% of people don't even think about where their seafood comes from. Why should they?
One thing I've just always not ever felt like it's productive to tell people what they should do. So I do what I do. And if that appeals to people, hey, I'm more than happy to provide seafood. And what I do is I always have the name of the boat. I know when the fish was landed. I give details to my customers about how those fish were landed. I'm into the story. I'm into people knowing that what we provide on a weekly basis depends on a lot of factors. It depends on the skill of the guy going out and getting those fish. It depends on how big the swell is. It depends on what is migrating and what is available and what quotas have been reached. All of that stuff, if you're not attuned to that, then you come to think that it's just always there. And the problematic seafood, as I see it, is the stuff that's just always there. So a major component of what we do is to educate. And, you know, people don't sign up for Sea Forager unless they're open to that. You know, I every now and then I get somebody who writes me an email saying, hey, you know, I could have gotten such and such a fish for half of what you're charging. And then I say, well, first of all, how do you know that such and such a fish is even the species that you're buying? The New York Times did a study. What was it? It was either 40 or 60% of all American seafood is mislabeled to the species level. That is just insane. So you're buying tuna. How the hell do you know what you're getting? Anyway, so I let alone how it was caught, when it was caught, where it was caught, who caught it, how they were treated, how much they were paid for that. I mean, all of that stuff. Once that becomes a mystery, then it's just there's openings for, you know, the miserable treatment of the ocean and the fisheries. I try to take that mystery out.
And the people who are part of that as well are down the whole supply chain. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of misery there as well. We've chronicled some of the work in Southeast Asia.
Oh, man, have you ever seen on one of my tours or at one of my talks, I met a guy who was working on a film. It was called, it's a really darkly humorous title. It was called Grinding Nemo.
No, I haven't.
Oh, my God. So if you're having a really bad day, do not go and see this movie. If you're having a really good day and you just think that you're flying too high and you want to bring yourself down a couple of notches, go watch Grinding Nemo, which is all about the shrimp industry, I guess, in, I don't want to say the wrong country, I think it was Indonesia or something, and how they've depopulated the coastal resource to the extent that the only fish left to feed the shrimp in the coastal destroying shrimp farms that are being built, the only fish left are the clownfish, like Nemo. So they put these drag boats that drag over the tops of these coral reefs and destroy the reefs, and then they catch these little tiny fish and then they grind them into fish meal to feed the shrimp that are in the shrimp ponds that are destroying the coastal ecosystem. So and they're employing slave labor to do this. Now you don't need to watch the movie, but you should check it out anyway because it will really impress you.
Gonna close this door, put a note on the door. I feel like going fishing. I'll grab my pole, head for the old fishing hole. Feel like going fishing. 'Cause when the blues get you, know they'll be with you all through the day. So when they got me beat, I head for the creek and fish all my blues away. I grabbed my hat, told my lunch in a bag. Like going fishing.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to the founder of Sea Forage, your seafood company, Kirk Lombard. So, Kirk, why don't you walk a potential customer, a listener, through the process if they were going to go on to seaforager.com and sign up?
Right. So you go to seaforager.com and you see there's like two possible avenues of your web surfing as you get there. So you can click on the thing that there's an icon that shows me doing tours. And you can take one of my walk-in tours around the area. And I'll go over the basics of fishing and foraging the California coast, the Northern California coast. Or you can click on seafood. And if you click on seafood, then you go to a link and it is all about Sea Forager seafood. And it sort of tells you what our governing principles are and why we're doing what we do. And you look at drop locations. I mean, I'm thinking if I was a customer, the first thing I would do is I'd say, okay, so these guys do fish drop-offs around the Bay Area. So are they in my neighborhood? So then you look up. We have about 30 different, I think even more than that, 35 different locations, South Bay, San Francisco, and East Bay. And you look up, okay, so I live in Glen Park. Oh, wow, there's a Glen Park pickup on Wednesdays. And what you do is you sign up then for what you want. Are you an adventurous seafood eater? And you're willing to take pretty much anything out of the ocean, which could be oysters, it could be clams, it could be squid, it could be small fish, or it could just be a fillet every now and then. If that's what you're well suited to and what you like, then you sign up for what's called the Neptune's Delight order. And I think it's a minimum of four, and you sign up for it. And every week you will go to that location and pick up your order. The other option, which I didn't mention, is called the slab order, and that's just a fillet. So you've got two options. Neptune's Delight, which could be anything out of the ocean, and the slab, which is just a fillet every week. And it's packed in ice, and it's put in a cooler, and the cooler goes, you know, in someone's porch or in the back of a cafe or something like this, or at your work location. We have a few coolers around town in businesses. And so Yeah, so then you show up and you open the cooler and you look inside and there is a package with your name on it. And you take it and you put it in your bag and you get quickly home, put it in the refrigerator, and then you eat it.
And sometimes you put some type of instructions as well that
yes.
kind of like, for example, if you're getting mussels, there might be some kind of recipe.
Oh, there's the whole backstory of that, which I'm sure my wife, Camilla, will chastise me for not mentioning. But of course, we provide for everything that we send out, we provide details about how it was caught, where it was caught, status of the fishery, if you want that information. And then Camilla provides recipes. And then our customers also send in recipes and photographs of their work, people who their culinary skill, I should say, and people who send the nicest pictures of what they did with the seafood we provide. They get little special treats like aprons and baseball caps.
I was curious how you find people to participate in the drop-off system. How does that work?
A large percentage of my customers are just people who took my tour. And then lately we're getting a lot of people through the book, my book that was published in September 2016. And so that's how we're getting a lot. But I also do I do speaking events and I do dinners where I provide all the seafood and I get up and I talk about it. And then my wife contacts neighborhood groups and, we just have a lot of contacts, a lot of word of mouth. We have flyers that go out in our bags that say, hey, if you sign up X amount of people, you get a free order or whatever. So we have all of that sort of promotional stuff and it's just been incredible how it's grown.
So do they get some kind of discount on their monthly yeah. subscription if they agree to be a drop-off location?
Uh-huh. Yeah, absolutely.
I see.
If someone wants to be a drop-off location, as long as they can get 10 signups, then we give them a free order every other week.
And you explained how one of your customers or potential customers complained a little bit about the price being more expensive than if they went down to Safeway and ordered and got a piece of fish. So how does a Safeway keep their prices so low?
Do they really? I think fish is pretty expensive around the board.
Well,
but yeah,
relatively.
They're cheaper than me.
How can a can of tuna be 50 cents or whatever?
Right. I suspect that the reason for that is simply that the fish are caught in huge volume and then whoever bought those fish initially paid pennies on the dollar for them. Let me just give you the case of sand dabs. Okay. So last year, most of the sand dabs that I sold were coming from one guy, hi David, out of Monterey, who would go out and he would catch the sand dabs with hook and line, okay? So he's dropping a line down to the bottom with a fishing reel, a mechanized fishing reel or whatever. But, a fishing reel nonetheless, hook and line. And those sand dabs, and all of these sand dabs, I mean, how big is a sand dab? A big one is, 10 inches, and maybe a quarter of a pound in weight. So imagine this. That guy has to go out all day long and catch those sand dabs, and on a good day, he's going to catch 350 pounds on a really good day. And that's a lot of work. And he did, 12 hours to get those 350 pounds of sand dabs. Now, if I'm going to pay him the same amount for his sand dabs that that a big drag boat gets for its sand dabs when it's catching 20,000 pounds in a day or whatever it catches, I don't even know that total because I don't buy those. If I pay that guy the same price, then he just made, you can do the math there, but it's $100 or something to go work for 12 hours and pay for his gas and his bait and his tackle. And maybe he lost a couple of lines. I mean, so I have to pay that fisherman, 10 times what the going rate for those fish are. And even then in my book, it's not enough. I'd like him to make more, but I have to, if I'm doing this business, I also have to make a margin. So that's how I can illustrate the difference.
Squeeze it to Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to the founder of Sea Forager Seafood Company, Kirk Lombard. So, Kirk, I'm interested, though, also in this, the guy who's fishing for sand dabs. Does he have other customers? Who else is he selling to besides other industry, other businesses like yourself?
He sells to my competitor.
Okay.
But my competitor is also, honestly, he's my friend. So he sells to Real Good Fish, which is my competitor. They operate a little more southerly than I do. We're Sea Forager. And he sells to whoever the hell is going to pay the most for his fish, which is what he should do. Fishermen in our area, they wear a lot of hats because, you know, seasons close, fish move offshore, something isn't biting. You have to be able to figure out what is biting and how to adapt and to do it. And so, like, you know, there's few people in the fishing industry that I know, few commercial fishermen that are doing only one thing. You know, just by survival, most of these guys do, they'll do some herring, they'll do black cod, they'll do salmon, they'll do crab. They do a lot of different things. And in the case of David, the guy that I get my sand dabs from, or I did last year anyway, this year there haven't been any. In the case of him, he does all of that stuff. So, you know, he has a lot of different markets, I would imagine. I'm not the only one. But in an ideal world, I would have a guy that just fished for me all year, and that's what I would be selling. Or, you know, get a boat of my own and go out and do it. But it hasn't happened that way. And, you know, I have other things that I want to do, which is, you know, a blessing and a curse.
You also provide a lot of variety to the customers, and that's not necessarily something that one fishing boat could do. For example, when I signed up for Neptune's Delight, I got clams and mussels and oysters. It was almost all shellfish. I think it was all shellfish, in fact. Oh, wait, I almost forgot. I got Dungeness crab twice, too. Why don't you explain some of the disparity in some of those procurement industries in terms of somebody who's getting oysters from or mussels from the Philippines or wherever versus these small fisheries that are procuring mussels and oysters and stuff in a sustainable manner?
So basically, it's funny that you say that because I have to admit that in the winter, our variety is much less than it is in the spring and summer, later spring and summer, and even into the fall, because the weather turns foul in the winter, especially this winter. And it's a great thing for a lot of stuff. I would imagine in 3 or 4 years, we're going to have a big salmon season because of all this rain, and that's great. But as far as the day-to-day of providing seafood to my customers, it's just been a nightmare because it's just been hard for anyone who's actually going fishing. You know, like crab has been fairly steady, but even that's been affected by all of this crazy weather. And so we've done a lot of crab. But just trying to get a fish for my fillet orders has been like a weekly odyssey. I just never know what I'm getting, and very often I have to fall back on my friend runs a trout farm called McFarland Springs Trout Farm in Susanville, and it's in California. And I've been providing a lot of that because, frankly, that trout farm is the only one that is raising trout on an algae-based feed pellet. And for those of us who are, you know, committed to the sustainability project, that's a really attractive thing. Because what that means is that here's a predatory fish, a trout, which is able to be raised on something that doesn't include herring or menhaden or sardines, so that the world's population of those incredibly important forage fish species isn't being completely sucked dry to feed this fish. The fish are also, the waste is fed back out over, you know, a meadow or horses. I mean, it's sort of like the Portlandia thing about the chicken with the Harvard education or whatever, right? Your chicken's name is Dave. Your trout's name is Bobby. You know, he was raised in this beautiful farm. He's fed on, you know, these feed pellets that never used any animal protein. And so, yeah, I have access to those because I know the owner of the farm. Kenny and Bill, they own the farm in Susanville. So I've been able to do a lot of that, but I don't want to do that week after week. I want to have fish. But given the state of the ocean right now, it's just been very difficult, especially considering that I've also got all of this really strict program of sustainability that I'm trying to follow. You know, the good news here is that as frustrated as I am about this, every day I go and I look at the signups and it's increasing every day. I mean, it just keeps growing. And and it's even going to come to a point where I have to just maybe cut it off because it's good, you know, it's just going to be harder and harder to source. But that point hasn't happened yet, and we're really happy with it. But it has been very amazing to watch how it grows. It's obviously what I'm doing is speaking to a lot of people because the signups don't lie, you know. So, but, you know, every now and then you get the person who compares your price structure to Safeway, you know, or even the variety to Safeway. And, you know, and Safeway's trying. I saw that they're trying to do some, you know, they've done some work on sustainability, so I don't want to just trash them. I'm just sort of talking from the perspective of just, you know, giant mega shopping area. You know, I wrote a thing in my book, The Sea Forager's Guide to the Northern California Coast. If you don't mind me plugging it.
Plug away.
Okay. Sea Forager's Guide to the California Coast, Northern California Coast, I'm sorry. I wrote a page at the beginning where I talked about the difference between a citizen and a consumer. And I think that what I'm opting for, ideally, is a person who's more of a citizen of the coast rather than just a consumer of it. A person can go to the grocery store and they can find cheaper fish than what I'm providing. Absolutely. And when I do get those emails, I don't really even know. I respond as politely as I can, but that's not what I'm doing. And so if my variety on the slab orders is less in the wintertime, that's just a function of what I'm trying to do. All that means is that I'm actually following through on my core principles. And if what you're getting is a lot of shellfish on your Neptune's Delight order, which is part of the deal with Neptune's Delight, that's because aquaculture facilities tend to be more predictable in the winter. And that's not to say that they don't close down. You know, I've had a lot of trouble getting stuff out of Tomales Bay in the last few months because of all the rain we've had. And when there's rain, you know, the coliform counts go up and they have to close down Tomales Bay. So, so I'm giving you all the challenges here, but I don't want it to sound like I'm, just hand me a violin or a harmonica and I'll play the blues.
He's the founder of Sea Forager Seafood Company, Kirk Lombard. Kirk, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thanks for having me, Alex.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Eddie Harris, Bobby Charles, and The Radiators. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.